We've got a mic roaming around, have we? Okay. This is a really, thank you, it's a really important point. Identity, we bandy the word around, but identity is the idea I have of myself. And it's very connected with our lifestyle, our possessions, our things, you know. Some people can, you know, let's take a fictional example. Somebody might have a new house full of well-insured Harvey Norman furniture and they lose it all. Their loss is nothing like the person who's got an old house that their family has lived in for generations that's got a whole lot of heirloom furniture that goes right back to the, I don't know what. The loss is, the second case is the loss of identity, isn't it? Identity is what we invest as an important part of ourselves. It's a painful process. We've got to pull that out of the lost object. That's what grief is about. And so there's no shortcut for that. We've got to actually give ourselves time, and people waver. And this is where I come back to that wavering between anger and frustration and the wish that it hadn't happened. And that can easily lead us to the anger and the blame and the recrimination. And I understand that somebody caused this fire. I think it's very important to separate the anger and the blame, etc., from your recovery. In the adrenaline state, we're all going together, and you want to pin your recovery, your emotional recovery, to some consequences for somebody. The frustrating thing is that if that'll go into a legal process that is not about revenge or the kind of emotions we're feeling. So it's never satisfying from that point of view. And rightly so, because it's law and order and justice and fairness and natural justice and all the rest of it. Try to make sure that you recognise when you're feeling angry and blaming, because blame is no solution. What we've got to do is pull back to the grief. There's always a path on from grief. We will come to the other end of it, although it doesn't feel like it at the time. And the first stage of that is where you keep waking up in the morning and think, is this real or not? And you get that boom where it hits. That means you haven't absorbed it in your full being yet. That will take time. I think that very often in terms of the issue of identity is actually asking yourself, what did things mean to you? Because the meaning is not burnt, is it? The object is burnt, but what it means is not burnt. And that's where, in due course, you can promise yourself that you'll try and reconstruct that in a different way for your life. But to do that, we've got to think about ideas and symbols and things of that sort. And I think it's very important to do it as a community. There are rituals that will be deeply satisfying to us that we can't create by ourselves. Well, we could create them as families. You know, our culture is not very good at rituals and symbols. Indigenous cultures do it all the time. But we need them. So be sensitive to that dimension of things. One other point is, when you're in cortisol for a long time, we now know that the chemistry in the brain means that the cortisol interferes with identity formation. We form our identity by laying down and connecting memories and putting them all together into a story. We can't do that when we're in cortisol mode. You know what it's like when you have a very busy time, you look back and it's all a haze, you can't really remember anything. And if it's too busy, you start to say, hang on, who's living this life anyway? And you get a sense of depersonalisation. I'm just the robot going along. So that's where the pleasure and leisure comes, to keep coming back out, and the mulling to actually put it together in that invisible way. Any other questions? Yeah.
Simple one.
C-O-R-T-I-S O-L. The name doesn't really matter. I had a friend... A colleague of mine was running a support group in one of the Black Saturday areas, and she was mystified because they kept saying, "Oh, I'm no good today, I'm in the corduroy zone." And she eventually realised they'd heard me talk about the cortisol.
The cortisol drug around?
It's called pleasure and leisure. Yeah, but look, there's no simple solution to that, but managing stress, recognising and managing stress. There's a lot of stuff on the DHHS website and emergency management. There's stuff on the Red Cross website. You could go to the New Zealand Red Cross website. They've got put a lot of stuff. There are videos of me talking about this stuff from Christchurch. There's a lot of handouts around that they'll all give you different aspects on it. Pharmacological agent. I think one of the things you could do, even if you don't do it, and men usually don't do it, is visit your GP regularly, because there are a whole lot of physical processes that will work worse on cortisol. And if you're in this stress mode, you'll be focused on the problems, you won't be focused on yourself. You want to go to someone regularly who will take your blood pressure, ask you whether you're sleeping, whether you're constipated, you know, because one of the most common symptoms for people after disasters, health disorders, is a whole range of trivial but very annoying symptoms, psychosomatic symptoms, you know, skin problems, constipation, sleep disorders, digestive difficulties, and they make life miserable. Don't tolerate them. Do something about them. And a lot of our physiological processes don't work properly under cortisol. You'd think when you're running in this stress mode, you need all the energy you can get. And sometimes you might feel like a very large piece of chocolate, right? Is that right? When you're highly stressed to get you through the afternoon? Is that just me? It's very good food, actually. It's one of the 10 most important foods to eat, chocolate. As long as it doesn't taste nice, it's got to be 75%. But anyway, now what happens when that hits your gut? You'd think your body would say, "Geez, I'm stressed. Ah, here's a whole lot of fat and sugar. Great, we can burn that. That'll really help." But it doesn't. It says it's in a cortisol mode. It's in endurance mode. It says, "Geez, I'm stressed. Here's a lot of fat and sugar. We don't know how long we're going to have to be like this, so we're going to stack this away here and keep burning up the muscles," because that's what happens in cortisol. We chew our own tissues up. Right? And so you put on weight when you most would like to lose it, because the physiology is actually on conservation, isn't it? I really understood that when I met with a group of case managers who were finishing up after 2 years of highly stressful work. This wasn't even the victims. They'd had 2 years of really stressful work. And they told me that the day before they'd had a meeting of 60 of them as a sort of final wind-up, and the conversation drifted around to stress and the impact of stress and dietary change and weight gain. And they ended up going around and telling up the amount of weight they'd put on as a group. Can you guess? As a group, they'd put on 500 kilos. Right? Now, it's not through lack of activity, as you can imagine. It's through the altered metabolic pathways. So it's just one indicator of how it's really, really important to take care of your physical health, because probably some people lost weight and other people put on a lot, but there's a risk you come out with a net change in your health status after this. And I think it's preventable as long as you slow down and preserve the routines and quality of life and don't allow the whole thing to railroad you into this, it's all about the physical recovery. It's very important that we do the physical, but we do it slowly and steadily while we hold everything else together. I want to say one thing about kids before we finish. it usually takes a few years to recover. And I think it's very important to create opportunities where you can keep tuning into kids and keep your eye on what they need developmentally. It's hard to do, but what we see is that quite often kids will buckle down, they'll go into cortisol mode too, and they'll be constructive, try and help out their parents and keep out of the way and not make more problems, which runs the risk they won't present what they need for their development. We're not mind readers. Our kids have got to actually let us know what they need in various ways. Maybe it's through whinging and complaining sometimes. They don't like what's going on and we need to listen and work it out. So I think it's really important to try to create opportunities where you can just give your family, not just your kids, but your spouse and so on, just give them your full and undivided attention regularly. That's all. And I think a lot of things will follow from that naturally. And I'll tell you with this last little story from the same dairy farmer community, where one of the farmers at this two-year point told me the following story. Somewhere in the towards the end of the first year, I'd probably done one or two meetings there. He said he came back late in the sort of evening, it was getting dark, absolutely exhausted, dropped down into the armchair with the television on, looking at the news, you know, like a zombie, waiting for his wife to serve dinner. And his five-year-old daughter was playing by on the carpet, and she just looked up to him and said, "Daddy."
"Yes, dear."
"How come you don't play with us anymore?" Now, his awareness was primed so that it went right in, and he realised he was in the process of losing his relationship with his five-year-old daughter. And so he immediately, that evening, he and his wife made a plan to go to the beach for 3 weeks, as soon as they could organise it. Now, you can imagine if he hadn't the awareness and was locked into his stress, he'd only have to say, "Well, what do you think I'm doing? I'm trying to get the farm going." And she'd just never ask him again, would she? Because she, you know, cares about him. She's not going to ask him a question that upsets him and makes him cross with her. And so, this then becomes just the beginning of a change in the relationship and the expectations. And all we need to do to undo that is to just create these opportunities where everyone just spends some time together and hangs out and just gives each other their attention and see what flows from that. I'll leave that with you. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Dr. Gordon. And just a reminder, we have taped that and we will put it on a website for you, and we'll give you the details of the website so that you can have that full recording. And I can smell the barbecue out there, so let's go and enjoy. Thank you.